At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Anything to lose, I have no secrets to how I could just be blunt and people could judge it however they judge it.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff.
Ahoy, friends. Thank you for tuning in to Truth and Justice. I'm Zach Weaver, and you are listening to the Friday follow-up for Season 15, Episode 6, The Robbery. This week, Bob broke down a major element in the state's case, and we also heard from Jody themselves. I'll be the first to say this episode was shocking and unexpected, and it raised a lot of questions. Today, I'm joined by Bob Ruff and Janet Varney, and the three of us are here to discuss it all.
So, this is a wild one. Kind of.
Yeah.
I thought it was. It was not that when I started prepping the episode for the week, it's not the direction I thought it was going to go. So I'm real curious to hear from you guys what you guys thought.
Yeah, I was not expecting it at all. We had not talked about this.
Mm-hmm.
The listeners know that like we talk a lot outside and, yeah. and I know a lot of things about the case that we don't talk about on here at this point, but I did not know this at all. I have no clue this was coming. I was pretty shocked, kind of frustrated. Truthfully, it's just weird to think like the whole time I've really been considering the fact that Jody had nothing to do with the robbery.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, they're like, yeah, we were there. It was part of an event.
Yeah.
Like we kind of find out possibly it wasn't a robbery attempt or at least Jody's portion wasn't a robbery attempt, but it was some sort of event. And it's, there's a lot there to unpack. I feel like I have a lot of questions too that we'll get into.
Yeah. What do you think, Janet?
I felt that you played the robbery thing close enough to the chest leading up to this point that it seemed possible to me that Jody had been there. But I didn't know the extent. Of course, we had no idea what the story would be. And it definitely, I mean, yeah, it adds a real interesting layer. And then obviously, as we get deeper and deeper into the episode and right before the episode ends, there's another layer that gets added on that mm-hmm. is very, very interesting. And I mean, this is quite a story. Like this is, I would read this book. I would watch this movie. I would watch the show. I don't mean to in any way put it into a context that makes it seem unrealistic. I'm just saying there are a lot of factors at play here. And it's going to be really interesting to kind of continue to tease them all apart and continue to fact check. And you know, yes, Zach, also, I have questions, and there are certainly a ton of questions from listeners. Some of them are just about clarifying. Maybe there's some confusion. And then some are questions that you would sort of expect when you leave us with a little bit of a cliffhanger there.
Yeah. Also, and to be clear, I didn't know Jody was there.
Okay.
You never said that
Jody wasn't there. You know what I mean? I think you were very responsible about it.
Yeah. No, what I had said... It seems like two or three follow-ups ago, this came up, and I think I said then, like, I don't know if they were there. I kind of feel like they probably were, and that was just based on, you know, there's all these witness statements that we talked about in the episode. It was like, there's too many people that right away were, like, saying that Jody was involved in the robbery. So it just seemed to me that that's why it wasn't as shocking to me that they were there, because I always kind of thought they probably were. So that was always kind of like in my mind. What was shocking to me is once they told me what happened in that whole conversation, then I started to think back to, if you remember way back when we talked about it, like in episode one or two, I was like, this robbery doesn't make sense. Like what? Like why is the shotgun in the car?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because the person doesn't want to be running around with a shotgun, but also they leave something with their fingerprints laying around there. That's weird. But I hadn't noticed then until I really broke it down then in this episode after I talked to Jody, They're like, oh, even Sturgill's report, it says what he says Mario said and what he says are two different things about how this whole thing happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then they start looking closer at, okay, so this Jessica Pratt said she saw the two people rush the car and they robbed Mario. But then I didn't catch until Jody mentioned when Jody said they didn't know nothing about Jessica Pratt at that time. Then I went and looked. I'm like, oh, shit, they didn't interview her until 4 months later. I didn't realize that didn't come out until 4 months later. And then you start seeing other comments. And so like some of the stuff I didn't cover in the episode. So there's like Carvel Miles was there's a few different people that said like he was joking about how funny it was to him to see Jody just come running out of the bushes after the incident was already going on. There's more corroboration to that coming. We'll get into some of it here in this follow up to the way Jody laid things out. One of the things that I just didn't get into, I kind of had it on our list of stuff we were going to put into the episode, and it just the way Jody talked long enough that I thought it explained it enough. But Leon, in a letter that Leon was writing to like the prosecutor trying to fix their thing, it's kind of in the same letter Leon is saying, I didn't have anything to do with this robbery, blah 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 blah, and then also says, in any way it was Jody was the one that was fighting over the gun, not me. But it was this weird comment.
Leon,
like, I wasn't there, also it was Jody over the gun.
Wait, so this is Leon writing a letter to try to what do you mean?
Trying to get out of it. This is something that I think a lot of people don't know. We're gonna have a whole episode because there's already people that have like read ahead and like appeals and newspaper articles and stuff.
Okay.
They're trying to bring this stuff in, but like there's gonna be a whole episode on the letters and kites they call them when they send letters within the jail. This is common in most of the cases we do. Once they get in, once the whole like snitches get stitches stuff, that don't mean shit once they get locked up. Everybody in there is like, I'll tell you this if you'll let me out. I'll do this if you tell me. So it's something like that.
Yeah.
But Doughboy was writing to, it was either to McGinnis or to the prosecutor, whoever, just trying to like, I told you I had nothing to do with this thing. Also, it was Jody that was the one that was fighting over the gun.
No.
So we don't have any questions about this, so I'll just ask this question really quick. In the interview, Jody says that Leon had just got out of prison like 30 days before. Do we know anything about that or what he was in for?
I do. I just talked with Jody about that yesterday. I don't remember. I think it had to do with some kind of a shooting or something like that.
Because he said, I mean, he's like, he didn't want to go back to prison. He's only been out 30 days.
Yeah.
So that seemed strange to me. And there's no questions about it. So I felt we need to bring that up a little bit. Also, the whole, like, Sturgill's so full of shit. Can we talk about that for a second?
Sure.
Like, I mean, obviously there's the reports are very contradicting. But the whole idea that, like, he comes up and he helps Mario wrestle the gun away.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at first, he doesn't say that. So I thought maybe I just put that into my head that he says that. But I'm like, no, he literally says in his report, myself and Lowe's came away from Newcomb with the gun.
Right.
Police officers are not trained to go interject themselves.
No, he would pull his gun out and say, drop it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On top of that, just logically, if you're going up to two people wrestling that have a gun, how do you know whose gun it's, who's the good guy? How do you know who's the good guy?
Right.
Quote unquote. Like it doesn't, it's so full of shit.
Well, there's more to that too. So and I actually forgot to put, I'll post it today. So by the time you all see this on Friday or listen to this on Friday, you'll see it. But I was trying to create a diagram so I could get an idea in my mind of where all this stuff happened. So I had like got a little map out of, you know, where the party store is, where the robbery took place, where Carvel Miles' house was, the little path Jody talked about. You can see it in the aerial. It's still there. Like you can still see like the worn down in the path where they ran through. So at trial, Sturgill says he pulled up like bumper to bumper, like hood to hood with the car. And that's how they were able to, that's how he was able to identify Jody as the second robber. Mm-hmm. But when you read all the reports, it says that Mario came from the store down and then on Broadway and then turned onto Bellevue. So if you imagine mind, that means he's driving south and he turns east onto Bellevue. And it's right there. The statue Jody talked about is still there. It's Roosevelt Park is that little park right there. And then Sturgill in his report says he went up Broadway, north on Broadway, and turned east onto Bellevue to pull up to the scene.
Wait, what?
So they both came from Broadway onto Bellevue from the same direction. And by trial, Sturgill's testimony is that they were facing, the cars were facing each other.
Uh-huh.
But in reality, he would have pulled up behind. But I realized I need to talk to Jody about that, because I realized that just yesterday after I'd already talked to Jody. But it's like, how, like, even that part's bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
At least the way they wrote it, he wrote it in the report.
Yeah.
Was that he would have pulled behind the car.
Right, right.
And then Jody would have, or the second, who seems like was actually Leon, would have ran right past them back across Broadway.
Yeah.
To go to, like, none of it adds up.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, when Jody would start telling me the story, at first I was like, before we were recording, I'm like, wait, what? And then it was like, I'm gonna hear them out, because the more I've read about the robbery, nothing makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. None of this adds up, and it's all conflicting. And then the way Jody explained it, it's like, oh, okay, now it makes sense. Hmm. That part makes sense with it.
And it seems like, I mean, in my opinion, I don't think that car was ever processed. I can't imagine you just don't see a shotgun.
A shotgun spray painted gold.
Yeah. And it's not like if, again, it's all me just thinking out loud, but like, if two people are tussling over this shotgun, and whatever happens, it doesn't end up like down between the seats where it's not visible.
Yeah.
Especially, in fact, it's a shotgun, but like,
right.
It seems like it would be laying right there.
Well, that was one of the things that always, I never got, like, why is the shotgun still in the car? I remember, because Erica knew about that before me, because she read all the trial transcripts before I even got really deep into the case file. And I remember her explaining to me, she's like, yeah, there was a robbery, and then they put the shotgun in, and then the shotgun got left in the car. I'm like, why was the, how did, what?
Right.
How did the shotgun get left in the car? But then when Jody's version, it was DeMario was the one with the shotgun, and Jody's telling them to drop the gun, and then Leon runs away. Well, now that makes sense,
right.
How the shotgun got into the car, because right. it wasn't either one of the robbers that were holding it. It was
right.
Mario that was holding it.
Right. Well, we have, we want to start with a little more clarification. I think we've answered some of this, but I think what people are struggling with is the same thing that you're struggling with, which is like all the different accounts of what happened and in what order. I think maybe people are bumping up against that also. Like, wait, what? So let me just read Becky's. Leslie had kind of a similar question about clarification. I'm going to read this to you, and then you can respond with anything we haven't already covered. I am confused as the order of events now. I thought the story as told by Mario to the police was the perp that got away initially asked Mario for a ride, which would have been Jody. Then he told Mario he would have to also include his bro, which would have been Leon. Then Leon introduced the gun, which they fought over. And when the police arrived, they both ran in different directions and Leon was caught. Jody's recounting of the event is exactly the opposite. Aside from which perp was ultimately caught, correct? But Mario's account, this would mean Leon asked for the ride and Jody introduced the gun and initiated the robbery. Is Jody saying that Mario misremembered how the robbery went down?
You have to remember that we've never heard from Mario. So, and that's kind of the point about, there was, look, this episode brought up a lot of things for a lot of people. Like, I've even seen somebody in the chat is like, I don't know if I can get, you know, I have to believe Jody's version of this, or I can't just be invested in this, because if Jody did something bad, like try to rob them, then I can't. And that's everybody's prerogative, what they believe or not. But the actual point of the episode, the part that was important to me, and again, it's easier for me because, again, I've assumed from the beginning Jody probably was involved in the robbery.
Right.
Like, we know Jody has a criminal history. We know like every single person that we've talked about in this case, victims, witnesses, suspects, all of them have criminal history in the city of Benton Harbor but everybody we've talked about has. Mario does. Everybody does. So the overarching theme of this, the thing that was important to me about it, was the dishonesty on the part of the police. So we have, let's take it back to other instances. We have McGinnis's report on what he says Sherelle Moore said. Then Sherelle Moore gets on the stand and says, that's not what I said. He's lying. And I did tell him this, and he's lying. We have LaShawn Harper saying that next morning they came right there to the police or to the restaurant and they said, we're looking for Jody because there was a murder LaShawn's memory of the timing now is he doesn't remember what the times were, but right then it was just hours before.
Right.
And they're like, this murder happened at this time. And LaShawn was like, well, Jody couldn't have done it because Jody was here until this time. That doesn't get put into the report. So, and we have the account that Sturgill has as far as how they ID'd Jody to tie them to this robbery seems, almost certainly was a lie how it happened. Even based on little things like that, what I just talked about, the direction the car came from, all that stuff. So what we have is Sturgill writing a report after Mario's dead saying what Mario said. So we can't really base that on, did Mario actually say these things in that order? The way that you just described it is not the way I'm remembering that report reading. The only thing that I remember that was conflicting with what Jody had said was, I believe Mario's report said that an unknown black male, who would be Jody, asked for a ride and got in the car, and then later Leon Newcomb approaches the car with the shotgun. But I think he says it was he says the person inside the car had the pistol and the person outside had the shotgun, which that didn't make sense because they like, how are they fighting over the pistol if the pistol's in the car and the guy on the outside on the driver's side is the one with the shotgun? But the only difference there was it's written as though Mario has clearly identified Leon Newcomb is the person who came in second and pointed the gun at them through the window, which when you're looking at this whole thing, the whole purpose of all of this for the police was to identify Jody as the second robber. So they make Leon be the one with the gun on the outside, even though we have Carvel Miles saying they saw Jody jumping out of the bushes and running up to the car. We have Leon himself saying that it was Jody fighting over the gun. All these different things. We have the shoes in the street, Jody showing up to Glenda Miles' house, all these things. So essentially, this is a long answer to your question, but it's a complicated one because we have a report that says what Mario said. We have no way of verifying if that's what Mario said. And we have multiple instances where the police reports are lying about what the person said. For example, McKinney writing his report that nobody lived in Sonia Lucas's apartment. McKinney deleting the interview with Victoria Miles from his report before he sent it to the prosecutor. McKinney saying that he got there at midnight, and then McGinnis saying the crime happened at 12:40. There's all these different things in there. So it's hard to believe that that's what Mario actually said that night, but it fit with the narrative that they were putting out.
Which I think is like, just to go back to kind of people feeling maybe uncomfortable that Jody was there or wondering if they should believe Jody's story. I think, again, the way you framed this entire season, talking about what this community is like and why it may be the way that it is, and then showcasing all of this seemingly fancy footwork that the police are willing to do to get whatever narrative out there that they want to when there's evidence proving that they are wrong and lying should tell you so much about how easy it felt for them to do that.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing that is so stunning is like, because people are like, why would, why would you go to all this trouble? And we can talk about that more. But for me, the loosey goosey, like, oh, I forgot what lie I was telling. So this actually doesn't match this. And then I forgot that I had included that sheet of paper. But really, I had put this other thing in there. To me, it's like, oh my God, how old is this of a problem is this? How easy would it have, like, must it have felt? Like, that's how little this community matters to law enforcement. It's like, no one's checking this. No one cares to the point where you can just be messy and sloppy about your lies because you're that confident that it doesn't matter. You're that confident that these people don't matter because they all have a criminal record and they're all bad and they all do this and they all do that. And one black person is as good as the next as long as they've got a criminal record. Or, you know, all of that stuff is like starts to feel really real for me in this episode in an even more sickening way than it did before.
Especially, I think Jody hit the nail on the head when he was talking about McGinnis and why he did it. When Jody said, I was just a throwaway. I had no family. I had no money. I had a criminal record. Didn't matter. I'm certain when this happened that none of the officers involved thought someone is going to come along and actually analyze what they did.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, and Sean, I see your question. McGinnis is black. My whole point is I'm talking about the community and the criminal record and the other side of the law. I'm not talking about race in that way. I'm talking about that type of community and that type of profiling.
So not just, you know, not just the overall case, but the particular officer that wrote this report, Sturgill, has a history of being having deception in his past. I mean, it's there.
Great point.
Literally had to resign because of it. And it wasn't something little. It wasn't a boo-boo on a report. I mean, he literally had someone else take a test for him, a physical test, so he could become part of the law enforcement. Like, that's not a little deception. So to think that he's not going to be deceitful later is crazy to me.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I want to just address Joni's question next. Joni says, why is Jody more credible than Sturgill? Have you corroborated any of Jody's version of the robbery with the other witnesses and participants? You mentioned that, Bob, earlier, but just bringing Sturgill back into it, I'm glad that you kind of drew a circle around that, Zach, and his own credibility. So, Bob, do you want to talk? Is there any more about that that you'd like to address than we've already talked about with some of those corroborations you mentioned? And
it's not that Jody is more credible than Sturgill. It's that the evidence lines up with what Jody is saying happened, and it's directly conflicted by what Sturgill is saying happened. Forget all of the stuff that was revealed in this episode. On its face, that night, Sturgill says, no idea who that other person was. Don't have a clue. And then suddenly the murder happens, and now they're able to identify Jody specifically. And then by trial, I mentioned the photo lineup. Well, the photo lineup was deemed inadmissible at the actual trial because it was a bullshit photo lineup. They're like, who was it? Was it the person who you know is the victim? Was it the person that you know was the other person involved? Or was it one of these two people that we think might have been involved in the robbery? And he picks one. He picks Jody over Carvale. And then that's inadmissible. So then it becomes, I recognize him right away because of the tattoo on his face and does this face-to-face identification. But even just with that, if you look back at like what he originally said, he didn't even see the person. And can you imagine, think just practically speaking, he rolls up to a scene and there's two people fighting over a gun in the dark. And he's looking face to face with a person that's running away from them and enough that they can make a positive idea about them while not having his attention on the two people fighting over a gun like that. So there's some basic things that just don't make sense. But the fact is part of the question was, is there anybody else that corroborates it? Like I said, Leon, in a letter to the prosecutor, said it was Jody fighting over the gun. Carvale says he thought it was funny because of what it looked like when Jody came jumping out of the bushes. The version that the version that's trying to fit with what Sturgill is saying doesn't add up either. In his report, he's saying that Mario said the person in the car was the one with the pistol, but he's out on the driver's side fighting with the guy with the pistol. So it's not just like we're just like, well, I believe Jody and I don't believe Sturgill. We're taking the different stories that people are giving and comparing them to the evidence. And the story Sturgill's telling, number one, changes multiple times. It doesn't fit with the evidence. And it doesn't make any practical sense whatsoever. The version Jody's telling fits exactly with the evidence. It's backed up by the other witness statements, short of Jessica Pratt, who said the two robbers came at the same time, other than her, 4 months later, other than her, it fits with what everybody else is saying. So we're not just blindly just deciding that we believe Jody over Sturgill. We're taking the two versions, we're comparing them to the evidence. One of them fits the evidence, and one of them is clearly a lie. And that matters, as I started to get at earlier, the overarching theme of this episode the part that the people that are really trying to focus in on Jody and what this means about Jody, the part that you're missing, some intentionally, some not intentionally missing it, is this is a big, big deal. They lied in order to attach Jody to that robbery so that they could make the case for the murder. In this case, Jody was part of the robbery. You can believe Jody's story that they just came running up and their brother had a gun to their stomach and so they took action. Or you can believe Jody was just part of the robbery. It doesn't matter which one of those you want to believe. In either case, Jody was there. Jody was a part of it. But that's happenstance because the police did not prove that. They could not prove that. It got dropped because they couldn't prove it. And they lied to build the case. Now, we take that same behavior and we put it towards the murder. This is why there are laws and rules and regulations in place for law enforcement. You don't get to cheat. You don't get to bend and break the rules. There are a certain way that you have to conduct yourself. You have to do it in an honest way and make sure that you get the right person. And this is a perfect example of why that's important. The people that are arguing for this, like, why does it matter? That's an ends justifies the means mentality, and that's how wrongful convictions happen all the time. There's prosecutorial misconduct. There's manipulating witness statements. There's coercing false confessions. There's planting evidence. There's all those things. That's the mentality of the ends justifies the means. We're pretty sure they did it, so it's okay for us to break the rules in order to get the arrest on them. With the robbery, they were pretty sure Jody was involved. They couldn't prove it, so they made something up. In the murder, they were pretty sure Jody was involved. They couldn't prove it, so they made something up. In one instance, they were right. But in the other instance, I think the evidence has overwhelmingly proved they were wrong. So that is what we should be focusing on. And if you're the type of person that's like, well, if Jody held a gun to somebody's head, then I can't support Jody. That's okay. That's up to you. If you're actually looking at, was justice served in this murder? You also have to realize this is not out of the ordinary. It wasn't even the first time Mario was robbed. Like, in that community, everyone's carrying a gun. Everybody's pointing guns at people all the time. People are getting robbed all the time. Like I said, Mario was just robbed, but we're going to talk about this weekend, not too long before this. You know, and I'm not making excuses for that because there are people that are like, Mario was so traumatized, and he may have been, I don't know. I feel for Mario. I mean, Mario, the last 3 days of his life were terrible. He was robbed with guns to his head, and then he was murdered. I'm not minimizing that at all. But it's not the first time any of those things have happened to him or a lot of these other people. But what you need to be looking at is what we're looking at. Our focus of this case is trying to figure out who killed DeMario Lowe's. That is the focus. That is my focus for this season. So my feelings about Jody being involved in this robbery are not as important to me as it is to understand how the police were operating in both of these investigations.
Got it. Well, that makes sense to me. Let's just talk really quickly a little bit more about the guns and what the evidence shows and what that's an important piece of this. I think there's still some confusion around it. Emmett had a question about, you know, yes, this conversation about struggling for the gun. The shotgun ends up in the back of the car. The 22 goes with Jody. Is that what we're saying? Like, what happens with the 22? Can you just like follow the guns with us for a moment?
Yeah, the 22 is recovered. So we'll use Jody's version of events because that's the one that I believe is true. Leon got in the car, asked for a ride. And by the way, other corroborating things were there were other witnesses that saw Leon with the gun. Leon used to keep the gun tucked in his pants. And there was like people that like made comments about how he like tried to walk with some goofy limp, but in the gun in his pants, the shotgun that he'd keep down his pant leg didn't help at all. So Leon flags down Mario, asks to get in the car, gets in the car, holds him up with the shotgun. Mario, according to Jody, gets the shotgun. One way or another, they're fighting over the shotgun in the car. Jody then approaches on the driver's side with the .22 pistol, holds the .22 pistol to Mario's head. And this is the part where, like, as I said in the episode, you're the finder of fact, but I'm just going to give you what Jody's version of that is. So Jody's pointing the .22 at Mario, tells him to put the gun down, get out of the car, And Jody says they told him to just walk down the street and come back and we're out of here, trying to stop the robbery and Jody's version of it. But so Jody's got the 22 outside the car. At that point, Mario drops the shotgun, gets out of the... We don't know where they dropped the shotgun, where he dropped the shotgun. But remember, Leon is sitting in the passenger seat. So he didn't set it in the passenger seat. So I think he dropped it in the driver's seat as he was getting out of the car, or maybe on the floor down there, so somewhere where Leon couldn't grab it when they ran. But Mario gets out of the car and they start fighting. And actually, I think they were fighting over the gun in the car where Leon, or where Mario was acting like he was going to get out, but then tries to grab the gun. Jody says he hit him with the gun. The gun goes off. Mario gets out of the car. They start wrestling around for it. Sturgill pulls around the corner, and then Leon takes off. So now the shotgun is in the car. Leon has left, and that's the person they later said was Jody leaving, but Leon has left, and now Mario and Jody are standing outside the car with the 22. They're fighting over it, and as Zach pointed out earlier, Sturgill's story sounds like not that he came up and helped wrestle the gun away from them. According to Jody, what happened was he saw the cop coming, let go of the gun, and took off running. But the gun, the 22, stayed on the scene. That was recovered by the police. The gun stayed, the 22 pistol stayed on the scene, and the 12 gauge or the 20 gauge shotgun remained in the car.
So we don't, here's the one thing that I'll say just to clarify. We don't have to believe a story there, whether right. It's Jody's story or Sturgill's story.
Yeah.
That's what happened. With facts, the 22 was outside of the car. Whoever had it, the 22 was outside of the car and was recovered outside of the car.
Yeah.
So there's no, like, it doesn't matter the story. It doesn't matter if Jody's story was, I was coming to help him, or there was really a robbery. Or
coming to help with the robbery, yeah.
It doesn't, that, I mean, just the facts, the 22 was outside the car, found outside.
Right. The only reason I said that this, as far as where the guns are found, exactly right. The only reason I mentioned the story is because the other version of that is that Jody was in the car with the shotgun, right, and Mario was outside with the 22. But everybody says Mario, Leon. Everybody says Leon was the one with the shotgun. Mm. Literally everyone, including Leon.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So Leon, okay. So I think we've slipped on pronouns a little bit there. So just in case anyone's confused. So Jody says that when they saw the cop coming, they dropped the 22. They just Correct. Left the scene.
Yes.
And Leon was already long gone. And so the shotgun somehow was in the back seat. 22.
We don't know if it was
ground.
In the back. The shotgun was somewhere there. In the car. Somewhere in the okay. car.
Who, it's never who puts specified. It in the back seat?
I don't know that it was. I don't know where back seat came from.
Oh, but it's come up, right? Haven't we talked about it being like someone thought somewhere at some point, maybe it was in the back of the car. Maybe that was speculation on all of our part.
I think it was speculation.
Because we were trying to figure out how was it not recovered? How did Mario end up with that gun and the police didn't take it?
Yeah.
Where would have had to be, I think, is maybe where that came from.
All I've read at all was that it was in the car. I don't recall ever reading where in the car it was. We know there was someone sitting in the passenger seat. So it wasn't in the passenger seat. And I would imagine if it was within arm's reach of Leon when they fled the passenger seat, that they probably would have grabbed it and taken it with them, I would think, unless they just don't want to be running around with a shotgun. But also, I think they wouldn't want to leave their fingerprints and DNA on the shotgun in a car.
So what would be is there any reason at all we can imagine that the shotgun would be in the car and be visibly in the car, but the police would not take that gun?
Now, that part's still bad. And this is why it's also very important that you be able to, that you should be in a situation where you can trust the police officers. In this case, we can't, because I don't know, like, I would like an explanation. I don't trust their story. I don't trust what they're saying that Mario said. I just don't. Because it's besides the other overwhelming things, it's things like that. Why was the shotgun? Why didn't Mario tell them? Right. So in the story, according to Sturgill, Mario only tells them about the 20. Mario says the 22 guy in the car has a 22, and then the other guy had a gun, just says gun to their head outside of the car. And then they're fighting over the 22, or he's a small pistol, but it was a 22 out there. So Mario never says the word shotgun in that statement. But I think I will say that I feel like I know the person in the car, Leon, had a shotgun. So how does that not come up? How do the police not find it? They clearly didn't process the car, obviously, mm-hmm. or they would have seen the good gold shotgun in there. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, but something's not adding up there.
Yeah.
Something is not adding up. And it also, to me, possibly lends a little more credibility to what Jody was saying, which was that Mario had the shotgun by that point and was pointing it at Leon. And maybe that's part of why Mario didn't tell Sturgill about the shotgun. I don't know. I really have no idea. It doesn't make sense. And we don't have police officers that we can trust to believe what they wrote in their report.
Got it. This, again, touches on some stuff that we've already talked about, but I just want to get it out there. As written, Robert says, sorry if I'm getting mixed up, but I thought the episodes to date have said or implied that whoever was the other person in the robbery was likely to have been DeMario's killer. I thought we were saying up to now the case against Jody was weak as it depended on Jody being the other robber, and the evidence to support that was poor. Now Jody has said they were the other robber. Isn't that bad for Jody, for the appeal, for the story?
Robert, and I say this with all due respect, I don't know what you've been listening to, because that's never been said anything like that at all. The police in the state used the robbery as motive for the murder. But that has nothing to do with the evidence. I was just having a conversation with somebody on Facebook before we started doing this recording. And they were saying, well, Mario was robbed and then 2 days later gets murdered. That's clearly victimology. So how can you say that we're looking at these as two different things, two different incidents? And the thing is, victimology is important. The robbery attempt is part of Mario's victimology. It's not the only risk factor, but it's a risk factor. And we use that to help us try to identify some possible suspects. So in that way, the two are connected. That's going to help you narrow down who some suspects could be. But that's not the end-all be-all. You still have to have the evidence from the murder. That's where they're separate. You still have to have evidence of that. For example, if someone was, you know, had some incident with somebody a couple days prior to that you think that gives this person a motive to kill them, and then 2 days later they end up dead, you're going to look at that suspect. But then you look at that suspect and, oh, they were overseas in London at the time of the murder. You see what I'm saying? Like
right.
it caused you to look and investigate that suspect. But then once you do it, you have to have evidence. In this case, first of all, the whole idea of Jody 2 days later trying to silence Mario from this robbery, that motive doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. But even if you believe it does make a lot of sense to you, if you have this motive, then we look at, okay, well, now, is there evidence Jody committed the murder? Well, we have the timesheet. We have Cornelius saying they gave him a ride home, talked to him for 20 minutes. You have Sherelle saying they had an argument. Jody took off all their clothes and went to bed and went to sleep, and they left. And when they came back, Jody was still asleep during the whole thing. And the murder seems to have happened sometime before midnight. So, okay, that was connected in the way that we should take a look at Jody. But you still have to have evidence that Jody committed the murder, and we do not have that. Not for nothing, you have the DNA of the person. Of a person who's on all the shell casings that is someone other than Jody that has no connection to Jody.
Yeah, I also want to just go back. Colin asks in the chat, were the police even investigating the robbery? Like, how much investigation do we have evidence of about that robbery, since you mentioned that the report about what Mario allegedly said was written after Mario had already died? What evidence do we have that the robbery was something that they had taken super seriously or been writing reports about or been processing evidence on and all that before Mario was killed?
It's a good question, Colin, and I don't know. It doesn't seem like, because we have, like, let's look at Jessica Pratt. Says she was right there, saw the whole thing. They don't go talk to her for 4 months. Typical MO of this department in this community is a crime like this, an attempted robbery, especially where nobody gets killed. They already made one arrest. I don't think they were making very much effort at all to solve this robbery until the murder happened.
Yeah.
I just don't see the evidence that that was happening, because it would be pretty easy to solve. Right. I mean, look at what's happening. So you have that Shaddis Wells, they say, that like came to the house and was threatening about, you know, when Leon was in jail. Like, none of that stuff came out till after the robbery. It doesn't look like they were. And that's part of why, like, this whole like trying to silence Mario, to me, like, if Mario was going to identify Jody, he would have identified Jody that night. If he didn't know who they were then, they didn't know who they were. Like, that, there was your risk of that happening. I don't think there was still a risk of that happening 2 days later.
Got it. I just want to address Abdu also, who just popped something into the chat. There's been a little bit of discussion in the chat about when Jody was honest. How long has Jody been honest about being involved in the robbery? Did Jody back then, when they were looking for the person who killed DeMario Lowe's, and word on the street seemed to be that it must have been Jody, because that was happening that very night. Was Jody, I'm laughing, and here's why. If I had been involved in a robbery, whether I had been involved or tried to stop it or whatever, and the person that had been robbed was killed, and that night people were already saying I had done it, I can promise you I would say I had nothing to do with that robbery. Right. Because my life would be on the line, and I would know what those police officers were capable of. So I'm just going to go ahead and say right now, again, whether I think it's a morally right decision to be a part of a robbery or not, I'm also not from a community where that's commonplace. There's so many things I have to do to put myself into Jody's slides. I sure as shit would never admit that I have been involved in that robbery. There's no advantage to it. There's zero advantage to being honest in that scenario. Apparently, there was zero advantage to being a police officer and being honest. But I would hold that person to a higher standard. So that's my answer. Bob, do you have any comments on that?
Yeah, I mean, the fact is Jody denied it. Just like you said, at trial, Jody denied it. I don't know when or if they ever came clean to anybody else about it over the years. That's why I was shocked. And the impression I got from Jody in our conversation was, because I'd had the conversation, like, listen, you got to be honest with me about it. It's the same thing I have with everybody. You got to be honest with me about everything in this case, because I'm trying to investigate it and get to the truth, and you can't be sending me on wild goose chases. You can't, like, I need to know what actually happened. I had that conversation with them already, and then they just said, I need to be honest with you. I was there, and told me what happened. There was no reason for Jody to come clean now, other than other than just to be honest about it. Like all the stuff that I pieced together about it afterward. Like, that wasn't like Jody didn't present that to me. He was just said Serge was full of shit. He didn't identify me. He didn't identify me as a second robber that ran away. I know that because that was Leon. I was the one fighting over the gun. It's just a big lie. They didn't present it as though it was like as significant as I find it to be at the time. The short answer to the question is Jody did not. Sarah in the chat says, I would lie for as long as I could. And that's what Jody did.
Yeah. In terms of, there was some questions from Tanya and from Katie and Maureen and Sarah about the, now that we know what we know, right, taking it back to knowing that the robbery charges were dropped, knowing that a judge had a look at that evidence and that all of that sort of went away. I think people are just wondering, like, how does that affect, like, would it matter if Jody could be charged for the robbery today? Like, how much does the robbery stuff, in terms of charges being upheld, charges being dropped, that stuff being used to then prosecute Jody in the murder, how does all that play out present day, if it does?
As far as, and I always have to preface this, I'm not an attorney, but this is my understanding. One, it was the charges were dropped with prejudice, which usually means it can't be charged again. And two, there has to be a statute of limitations on attempted robbery that's shorter than 23 years. So I don't think Jody could be charged with that robbery now. As far as how it plays out and with the, you know, an appeal on the murder case, I think it could matter, right? So when you're looking at the integrity of a conviction, you're looking at, was the trial fair? Was the evidence true and accurate? So if it's proven that the testimony by Sturgill at trial that he came face to face with Jody as the second attacker and identified them positively before they fled was a lie. That's a due process violation. You were convicted based on false evidence. And it doesn't matter. And this is one of the few times I think that it flips the other way, because oftentimes we're always dealing with, on a practical, real level, something shows that they're innocent, but it's not something that you get to argue because of whatever rules of law. In this case, it almost kind of, to me, it seems like it would flip the other way on that, where it would be at trial, looking at that evidence was false evidence. In a practical world, we know that didn't really matter because Jody was there. But that doesn't, I don't think that plays, right? Because that evidence wasn't presented to the jury. The evidence that was presented for the jury was incorrect. It was false. So I think it could be, I think it very likely will be significant.
Okay. So clarification question from Emily, is Leon the son of the foster parent that was on the jury? So we have this information that Leon was a foster brother to Jody. And then we have the information that Jody's former foster mother was on the jury. So people are wondering what the relationship was, if any, between Leon and that person on the jury.
None. I did ask Jody that yesterday. We got cut off right at the end when we were trying to have that conversation. But the last thing Jody said was no. The former foster mother that was on the jury was a foster mother that they had when they lived in Niles, which is a different town down by like where I live.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not the one that was the same foster mother that Leon had had.
Yeah.
Since we're talking about relationships, I know there's several questions and to kind of move things forward. It seems like the Miles family has a lot of personal relationships in this case.
Yeah.
Whether it's Carvel or Glinda or Veronica or Victoria, like they seem like they're like, why did Jody run to Glinda's house?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Jody was friends with Carvel.
Okay.
But yeah, the Mileses are all over this case. So you have, you know, Victoria and I think Dora both lived at the crime scene.
Mm-hmm.
Those are Carvel's sisters. Carvel lived with his mom, Glinda, up the street a little bit. All of them become witnesses in one way or another. Jody knows Carvel because Jody used to date Carvel's cousin, Mona,
okay,
Miles at some point. So yeah, the Miles are connected in a lot of ways to the case.
Got it. Yeah, there was also a question about, just for clarification, and I know we're running out of time, so there's probably some stuff I'm going to have to hold on to because there were a ton of questions for this one, and there's a lot to discuss. So I'll save them, and we'll try to plug them in a future episode. Just to be clear, Emmett wants to know, was Mario Leon's cousin or Jody's? Because we heard in the conversation with Jody that whole piece of Leon saying to Jody, I want to get the word to Mario that I'm sorry, I didn't know they were family.
Yeah, so that was Leon supposedly found out that he was a blood cousin of Mario's, not Jody.
Got it.
Leon and Mario.
Okay. And it sounds like we're going to be getting there in a future episode too, in terms of more on Leon, more on the letters that were being exchanged inside, yes, the kites, as you call them, or as people call them. Oh, I loved this point from Sarah. Sarah says, even though Mario did not know Jody's name, he, Leon, would have surely seen, sorry, I think that that's actually what you mean, Sarah, is that Jody and Mario would have been struggling. Even though Mario didn't know Jody's name, they would have surely, Mario surely would have seen Jody's face if they were face-to-face struggling with a gun. Therefore, you would find it odd that, according to testimony from the night of the murder, that Mario would have had a long chat with Jody face-to-face for a few minutes before the murder happened. Like that you would just sort of have this exchange with someone that you didn't know before, but that had tried to rob you and that you'd be struggling with, that you would like meet up with them and have what sounded like sort of a calmer conversation, according to a witness, before that person would then try to kill you.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible, but that's just a whole lot of things have to be true for that to be true.
Right,
I mean,
right.
Somehow they have to have contact with each other. Jody didn't have a cell phone. Mario did. Police had Mario's cell phone, gave it back, and we never hear what they found on the cell phone. I mean, the overwhelming glaring problem is that Jody was not there.
Right.
During that time, Jody was at work. So, yeah, I mean, in a world where they did come into contact, does it make sense that they would have a conversation that would escalate? Sure. But there's no evidence that that happened.
Right. Well, I think Sarah was even saying that that would seem strange to her. Like, even if you accept all of the things leading up to that point, the idea that they would have that conversation seems strange to her. But I see what you're saying. If Jody would go there to say, hey, don't tell anyone it was me, then I guess, yeah, you can make that argument. Okay, the shoes. Let's just quickly touch on the shoes. The shoes were, just to clarify, the shoes that Jody slipped out of were on the street side, right? They weren't on the sidewalk. So that supports the idea that Jody was on the passenger side. Is that, or that ran away?
On the
ran
driver's
away
side.
From the, yeah. Ran away from the driver's side. Got it.
Yeah.
Were those shoes collected? What happened with the shoes?
I don't know. To be honest with you, I don't even know that I can confirm it because I don't have the full investigative report on the robbery, if there is one. Evidently all the files were shredded. I'm going to go ahead and file a open records request for it. I'm not expecting to get anything from them. Jody had some of those documents. Something came about with that earlier. There was an appeal at some point where Jody had said that they gave the timesheet to their attorney prior to the murder trial and they didn't use it. I don't know if that's true, but I know it was in that original file that I got that we weren't sure where it came from. Jody said that they had a family member while they were in jail awaiting the murder trial that got a copy of reports about the robbery and about the murder prior to the trial, that they were able to get copies of that stuff from the police department. And that's where Jody got some of their materials from. But then later when stuff was turned over by the state, some of that stuff wasn't included anymore.
Okay. And then the last sort of general theme I'll just touch on, because I feel like we're going to absolutely be talking about this in future episodes, is just people generally feeling a sense of confusion about why this murder was important enough to frame someone, why Jody was important enough to need to frame Jody. What's the significance of, you know, the relationship, whatever it turns out to have been between Jody and McGinnis, that would cause all of this stuff to happen the way that it did? I think people are just, you know, really wondering about that and hoping for more.
I don't know that we have the answer to that other than they wanted to close the case. It seemed like an easy target. Basically, what Jody believes is that McGinnis went after them for this murder out of being vindictive, right? Mm-hmm. Trying to, you know, they were mad at Jody about something, and so they went ahead and framed them for this murder. I don't know, but there's no way to verify any of that stuff. So I wish I had the answer to that. I don't. Doesn't make sense to me. So many murders go unsolved. Why they worked so hard in this particular murder to frame Jody? I wish I could tell you that. I don't know. Okay. It doesn't make sense to me. Why they even work so hard to solve it?
Yeah.
If you don't believe they framed Jody, is it because they certainly bent over backwards to try to make this thing happen?
Yeah.
And with that, I know we were right at your heart out, Janet. So we're gonna go ahead and wrap this thing up. Make sure you guys tune in on Sunday. Sunday's episode is all about Carvale Miles. We've mentioned him many times and how he has connections to both the robbery and the murder. And some people thought he was a suspect. So the whole episode is going to break all that down on Sunday about how Carvale Miles was connected. So that'll be Sunday. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music for Season 15 is created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kate Woodyomnik, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X at Truth Justice Pod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney. And Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.